Blog Talk Radio.
You got to make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling cruisy.
Hey everybody, this is Janine Loudon. I'm your candidate for treasurer for Coffee Party USA, and we seem to be having technical difficulties where our host Vince Lamb has not called in, and so I'm sitting here waiting for him, and I only know how to open the show because I do a Blog Talk Radio show. So what I'd be happy to do is there are a couple of people in the queue right now who are not Vince Lamb, the person who will be interviewing me for this position. But I'll tell you what, I'll start opening lines and see what you have to say. Hi, you're on area code 808. You are on the interview show for Janine Loudon, running for treasurer of Coffee Party USA.
Hi, Janine. This is Cameron Kruger. How are you doing today?
Oh, Cameron. Great to hear from you. hey, listen, if you could text Vince and tell him to call in on the assistance line or on the guest line, that would be great. For some reason, he's having technical difficulty getting in, and I know he was having internet problems earlier. Could you do that for me?
Absolutely. Just hold on for a couple minutes. I'll get him online.
All right. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
Hi, you're on the Coffee Party interview for Janine Loudon running for treasurer.
Aren't the positions supposed to be reversed?
I know. Vince, wonderful. Please take over your show.
Okay.
Something happened and it booted without you, so I took in.
What happened was my wife called me up to see if I could do something. I said, the call begins in 30 seconds whether I'm there on it or not, and I had to go back downstairs.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Oh, well, technical difficulties aside, thanks for inviting me to the interview.
Thank you for coming. And I've got, holy cow, someone else came in as host, too. That's weird.
No idea.
I'm looking at the dashboard. Anyway, yes, I'm Vince Lamb, and tonight we're interviewing Janine Loudon, who is running for re-election as treasurer of the Coffee Party. And this feels like deja vu because I've interviewed her 2 years ago. And now I'm trying to remember what questions I asked. Well, you know what? It doesn't matter. And if I ask the same questions, we can hear the answers again. Hey, Janine, tell everyone I've been working with you off and on for, oh, my Lord, 2 years?
More, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, but not everyone who has listened to the show has been involved with the Coffee Party that long. Some people may have be tuning in for the very first time. So why don't you tell us about how you got involved with the Coffee Party?
Well, great. I'd love to do that. So, you know, 3 years ago, 3+ years ago, there was a lot of vitriol in the political conversation. And I actually got involved, got a Facebook page, you know, put myself out there into that conversation. And it became, if you can think back to 2010, 2011, it became very much about kind of a linguistic sparring that was going on in terms of a lot of the political concerns of the day. And I think I must have been getting intense because my sister Joyce and I went to the Rally to Restore Sanity back in October of 2010. And we were talking and we were on Facebook and we were having conversations. And she said, you know, Janine, feeling this way could shorten your life. You know, I think I know a group that you should check out. And so, you know, we checked out she showed me how to check out the coffee party. And actually, they were at the rally to restore sanity. And so I got to sort of do a little chit-chat with folks. And this whole notion of civility and reason, of actually using whatever linguistic skills I had or writing skills I had to enter into a different level of conversation really, really appealed to me, especially, you know, because it's a hard life when you're out there sort of chomping at the bit and challenging and being challenged, and facts seem to wane and emotions seem to come and go. Long story short, I have credited the coffee party with saving my life more than once, because it was like an unexercised muscle for me, this whole notion of transpartisanship and civility and reason and, you know, well-vetted information, or, you know, all the things we've talked about over the years. And I got to, it's like going to the gymnasium and exercising those muscles that don't work. And so while I'm human and I fail from time to time, this is who I am now. And, you know, there are even challenges I face even today in my everyday life that I know I am dealing with differently because of my time engaged with all of you. You know, having all of you is my my peer group, and all of you is my support team. And that I feel like we're sort of altering the conversation, making a difference that way, and others. But that's a big one for me.
Oh, you know what? That is something new, because I don't remember hearing that you got involved by going to the rallies to restore sanity. I mean, you actually were in Washington, D.C.
I was.
Wow.
Me and 250,000 of my closest friends.
I envy you, because at the time I actually was not a fan of either Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, who were the host for that thing, who organized it. And I knew, but I was involved with the coffee party, and they were, you know, I knew that people in the coffee party were very active about going to that.
Well, it was
so
a happy accident
also,
for me. Happy accident for me.
Wow. You know, the thing is that the person who introduced me to it is my wife. She said, you should check this out. And that's how I got involved with it.
Well, I think there are a lot of us, somebody called us the refugees of the Rally to Restore Sanity, but it's more like the post-event reality, you know, that we weren't alone. You know, just like Occupy, agree with some part of it, don't agree with all of it, it doesn't matter. Occupy sent the message, you are not the only person that feels this way. So whether I was watching Occupy in Portland, just up the road from my home in Oregon, whether I was watching what was going on in New York, it didn't matter. I was not alone. And the Rally to Restore Sanity was a huge message. I am not alone in my feeling this way. And the coffee party offers me the same opportunity. We are not the only people who think that well-vetted information, that information transcends the news cycle, that a conversation among peers who may or may not agree is a powerful thing, and it can be the basis of powerful things to come. And, of course, from there, I got involved. I joined. I took the pledge. I became a donor. I got involved, and that's when, not too long after, Annabelle Park and Eric Weiler were putting together their, I didn't know Eric at the time, of course, but I didn't know Annabelle. And she was putting together the Enough is Enough rally, and I became an Enough is Enough volunteer and spent months participating with that group and finding that very fulfilling. And then being in Washington, D.C. on the day of that rally and, you know, supporting, I played a support role to all the people who were speaking, who were filming, who were shuttling people out of the cold and into the warm. If you were at that rally, you know we had a nor'wester or nor'easter, I guess you call it over there, that day, and it was literally sleeting and snowing on us. And when I had my chance to do my little talk, my 3 minutes for YouTube, My lips were so purple, and I was so cold. I had hard time forming some of my words because it was amazing. But I tell you, it was one of the best experiences of my life. And while I was in Washington, D.C., Annabelle asked me to run for the board of directors and thought about it for a long time and finally decided that I would. And I did, and that's when I met you, and that's when I met the board development group and the interview team and got my start in being on the board of directors.
Because I remember interviewing you twice for that, once for the vetting, and then again on the for the previous program more than 2 years ago, and that's when I discovered the expression that you use, the magical hoop-jumping fairy. So, can you tell us about how being a magical hoop-jumping fairy has worked for you at the coffee party?
Well, well, I'm a little embarrassed, but here, so
it's
I think
line.
That all organizations have people that I want to call the shoemaker's elves. You know what I mean? They're in the background. They're invisible. You never see them. But there are very important jobs that need to be done. And at the time, I was actually running for secretary, and I have been a secretary on a board of directors for a private nonprofit in Oregon for more than 20 years. And so I knew there are many, many things that one has to do, a lot of locks to be checked and a lot of papers to be filed and a lot of notes to be taken and minutes to be posted and all these things to be done. And I know that it's kind of a thankless job. If you do it right, if you do it well, everybody goes, hey, what do you do? And then if you don't do it well, they go, hey, what do you do? I mean, it's kind of one of those things that needs to happen and people want to have it happen, but someone else should do it. So I thought, well, maybe that's me. And then in this other position where I was secretary on this different board, I'm actually secretary slash treasurer. And so I've been involved in auditing and in tax return filing and in all those other wonderful things that everyone knows need to be done, but nobody really wants to do. And so when the treasurer position came open, I was shifted over there into the treasurer position. And so I've been doing that job for 1 year, and that's the position I'm running for now.
Okay, so you've been elected as secretary, and then you got appointed as treasurer, and then we elected a new secretary, and then you have a secretary appointed, which is me. I mean, I was a secretary through the transition team, so once again we have the two secretaries on the board talking to each other.
Yes. Yes, we do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you don't have to explain to me what I need to do. I'm doing it. At least I'm trying. But you're doing it because you did a good job explaining what you're doing now in to the audience out there. And you also stole my next question. Darn.
Oh.
Which is, how did you get to treasurer? But what else have you done that involves working with money that, you know, qualifies you for the treasurer position? Don't you own your own business?
Oh, well, I did.
Okay.
Sold my firm. Yeah, years ago. I am retired. I'm a retired business owner. And actually, technically, for those of you who understand the nuances of business, I was the majority shareholder of a closely held corporation. And so that made me president and chief executive everything, basically. And so I had a service-oriented business. We did operations and maintenance in research facilities that included daily operations and renovations and retrofits, and we even got into the business of building brand new laboratories. So we were we called ourselves grease monkeys for science, and we had sort of a zero tolerance for failure facilities environment where the creation and integrity of data was our product. And in order to deliver that product, you know, we were plumbers and electricians and carpenters and painters and janitors and engineers and electronic technicians. And so we went and took care of other people's facilities so they could do science and we could do the building science within.
Speaking of grease monkeys for science, didn't you once say that you had your company had the contract for taking care of monkeys for NASA?
Well, actually, not just the monkey colonies, and we kind of call them non-human primates. But, yeah, we for a few years we were at Mountain View, California, at the NASA facility there, and we maintained the animal husbandry facilities, both for animals involved in space flight and then also animals who were the ground control comparisons to those. And so, you know, if something flew, there was something on the ground going through the same procedures as the animal in space. So my biggest claim to fame, I think, is I used to have we would hold primate class. Right, so they were teaching monkeys how to fly, and so these were rhesus monkeys and spider monkeys, and they had to learn how not to take off their diapers, how to keep their seatbelts on, how to not turn their heads, because monkeys have amazing number of head movements per minute, and head movements per minute is the best indicator of space sickness, and so we had to teach them how not to be ill in space.
Oh my goodness! And I had no idea that NASA controlled their variables so much that they actually had not just comparisons on the ground, but comparisons on the ground where they made sure that all the procedures were controlled for as well. So the monkeys were doing exactly the same things. And it was just the difference was one was up flying through the upper atmosphere up into space, and the other one was on the ground doing exactly the same thing. So that any comparison, every variable. Every last variable, except the one they were interested in with space flight, was controlled.
Right, right. Well, and that's kind of standard scientific procedure and certainly animal husbandry procedures for animals involved in scientific research. So, there's all kinds of organizations with all kinds of initials, and we have to manage their standards, but also part of the standards we comply with are those that create validity for data. And so since data is the ultimate project of all of us in science, and that was our job. And it's fascinating work, but I bring this back to Treasurer for you, and that is that I administered multiple government contracts simultaneously in three western states with my highest number of employees was 40, but they were all I never had a minimum wage employee. You know what I'm saying? It's like these are folks who are up to, are A game. And so I had to learn a lot about how does one make money work in that kind of a highly variable situation. And, I went into this business knowing everything about providing the service, right? I had been in middle management for two different multinationals. I knew the business, per se, and I had a particular commitment to my employees that might have been a little different. Our motto was service with dignity. But what I didn't know when I started was how does the money work? And that's all the way from how do you get money to grubstake yourself, all the way through how to, the taxes you pay and the benefits you buy. And, it really goes on and on. How do you secure lines of credit? How do you manage your cash flow in such a way that, you don't not make payroll? And I learned all of this long division, and so it occurred to me since my retirement that what I needed to do was to somehow give back that skill set because that's, like I said, it's something that the hoop-jumping fairies need to know how to do, but it's not anything that anyone else should have to worry about. And so that's been my form of contribution, not just to this organization, but to others as well.
Well, I'm glad we have you on board. Now I'm trying
well,
to make a good,
I'm
I,
very happy
I know
to
what,
be here
I know what
I'd
question
like
I want
to say.
Ask last, but what's that?
I said I'm very happy to be here, and I'd very much like to stay.
Well, good. The thing is, I'm trying to find out a last question to ask you, but I have a last question to ask you, but I don't want to use it up right now.
Okay.
Well, you know, it was because, but it's that you that you share with us that when you were at Oregon State.
Yes.
You said you were a cheerleader?
Oh, yes, I was. Twice.
Twice?
Yes.
Well, what I intended to do, if it's not cheerleading, is have you do a cheer when we sign off. Not right now.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, you know, cheerleading is an interesting thing, too, because to give away my age, you know, I'm going to be 63 next month. And so back when I was a woman athlete, I was a scholar athlete, so to speak. And in high school, we were allowed, women were allowed a few sporting events, right? I've been playing baseball since I could walk. I was, you know, picked first before the boys in school when they picked teams. And yet I went to college and there was nothing going on there. And I'd been a, you know, so we were allowed some track and field activities back then. This is pre-Title IX. And so actually one of the greatest athletic endeavors of my life was being a university cheerleader, because that was, you know, we were dancing, we were doing double stunts. I had been a gymnast in high school, so that part kind of came easily for me. And it wasn't for some while before anyone was getting scholarships for that. We were all, you know, none of us were paid anything for doing it. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. And it was the kind of athletic endeavor I had been looking for in college. So little else was available then. And I'm so thrilled for women today who actually have the opportunity to play sports at a collegiate level, you know, to have that kind of peer group, to have that kind of experience, and then to, you know, actually have it contribute to their ability to go to school. Because I basically worked my way through. And as we know, that was possible in the 60s and 70s. It's not possible today. So it was what I did, instead of, you know, be a soccer player, which is what I would have been if I'd gone to school today.
Ooh, and that's actually a decent amount of, that's actually, yeah, that's an interesting thing to see about the World Cup. And it's, okay, I'm making no sense.
How well, the World Cup today made no sense. I mean, you know, the Germans just made mustard out of... Brazil didn't belong in the semifinals. They never did. They got a little too much help from their officials on the way. I'm sorry if I'm alienating anybody, but I am both a soccer player, and we call it football, by the way. I'm a football player, I'm a football coach, and I'm a football referee. And so the World Cup, I, you know, can't wait when it comes. I can't contain myself. And the Women's World Cup, everybody, is going to be in Canada next year. And so for me, that's like driving distance. The playoff match is going to be in Vancouver, British Columbia. That's, you know, 8 hours from me, and I'm going to be there. It's going to be amazing.
You're making me feel envious. And, yeah, you said mustard. I would say salsa out of Brazil. But
well,
yeah,
you know, they were wearing their little orange costumes, or their gold costumes, but I'll tell you, they – I felt bad for them. I really did. It was that match didn't belong in the semifinals. But it's okay. It makes me feel less bad about losing to Germany in a stoppage goal. And for those who don't know, stoppage is the time after the end of the match that the referee gives in order to make up for slowdowns and timeouts.
Well, we're coming up the last 7 minutes. What's that?
No, go ahead.
I'm not yawning. It's just
okay.
That's not the kind of football I played in high school. So, although it was fun to watch my kids play it. But let's go switch the topics. I mean, right now I'm looking to see one caller. I want to see if that caller wants to ask any questions. So whoever's also on the line from Hawaii, onto a Hawaiian number, if you want to talk, press 1. Otherwise, we'll move on. I'll ask Janine, what question would you like me to answer that I haven't asked yet?
That I would like to answer?
That I haven't asked yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Give us the question.
Sure.
I know. That's hard.
Well, you know, I guess if there was something I wanted to say, let me think about this. Okay, if there's something I wanted to say, it might be this, and that is, sometimes people look to the board of directors for absolute leadership. And I've been describing myself as a person in service of leadership. In other words, I'm not afraid to lead on things I know and understand. I'm not afraid to participate, and I'm not afraid to be a high-level participant. But I believe that leadership, especially in a grassroots organization, but even in my company, did not always come from the corner office. As a matter of fact, I used to look to my employees to be leaders in their own fields and to be able to participate in creating innovative solutions to the kind of problems that show up in research, which are problems that have never, questions never asked before. Let's put it that way. And so in a grassroots organization, what I hope for, what I dream of, is an organization where leadership comes from outside the inner sanctum. And that comes in the form of, you know, being a volunteer and participating in creating things. It means doing what you do at home and sharing it with the rest of us. It's not a grassroots organization if all the leadership comes from an elected board or an inner sanctum of those with influence. We haven't arrived as a grassroots organization until we all feel like we own it. And so my hope would be the ideal treasurer would be someone who empowered the things inspired, you know, made them financially possible, made them legally possible, made them, you know, dotting I's and crossing T's so that the inspiration that comes from us all can find a way to manifest. And that's what I'm in for, you know, for something I don't even know we're going to do yet.
Well, speaking of things we don't know we're going to do yet, what would you like Coffee Party to be in by the end of your term and by the end of the time you're eligible with this stint in 4 or 5 years' time?
Oh, where will it be?
Where do you want it to be? Yeah, you don't have control over where it will be very much, but you do have control over what you want it to be. Where do you want us to be?
Sure. Well, that's interesting because you're giving it the identity of Coffee Party. And what I believe is our movement. And the movement is really about civility and reason, moving forward using the tools of civility and reason. Now, we've focused as a group, as a community, we have focused on a few things that are very important. You know, the whole idea that campaign funders make more difference to our elected than the campaign voters. That's a big problem. Money in politics is a huge barrier to our being able to conduct the civic discourse that we believe should be conducted. How can you have civility and reason in the state houses, in the halls of Congress, if indeed those people aren't actually here to have a conversation in the first place? They're here to you know, do what it takes to continue to be funded, to continue to be elected, blah, blah, blah. You know, we all know about the revolving door between being a lobbyist and being an elected. We all know about the challenges that we face as a nation in taking control of this republic's democracy and really having voters matter more. So I think we contribute those tools, and I think that we are able or should be able or strive to be able to ensure the kind of communication person-to-person and Facebook-to-Facebook and Twitter-to-Twitter and post-to-post about how we as a nation of communities go about doing that, bringing that in together. And so sometimes that looks like playing with other organizations, and sometimes that looks like doing our own thing. But ultimately, the ultimate job, I think, of any grassroots organization is to take that unique power that sits where you sit, that's sitting in your chair right now, and transform it into this collective will that gets things done. I'm old enough to have watched the collective will make a difference, you know, in politics, in social justice, in warfare. In Oregon, we brought about the end of a nuclear power plant that was just inappropriate. But the collective will was able to take it on, and it's gone. It's gone. And so whether it's on a small scale or a large scale, I'm in Hawaii today. I'm calling in from Kapulina on the north end of the Hamakua coast on Big Island. And here in the islands, we're talking about GMOs and what the effect of GMOs has on this microcosm world out here in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. The collective will can take these things on, but we have to know about each other, we have to know we're not alone, and we have to find a way to interact with one another. And so where will coffee be? Coffee party be? Coffee party will be right in the middle of that dialogue. And what those issues will be on that day, I'd like to think they're different than today. I'd like to think we don't just keep spinning, but that we actually make a difference and move on, make a difference and move on with other groups and within ourselves.
Well, Janine, you know what? That's more inspiring than any cheer I could ever imagine you giving us.
Thank goodness.
And you know what?
I used to have
with
a favorite
that?
At Thanksgiving. My dad would make me say grace, and I would do rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub. Yay, God.
And what was your father's opinion of that?
No, that was Mike came home from college, and my dad said, Janine will say grace. And I went, holy moly, what am I going to say? So that's what I said. And there's my cheer for the day.
Okay, I've got a cheer out of you anyway. And with that, Janine,
yep.
We have been on the air for half an hour, and we're going to close out. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much for starting the call about me. I think that was not your idea, right? It was the shows.
Well, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? We do what we need
right.
to do. And
right. Okay, Janine, thank you very much, and good luck in the election. And remember, to everyone who is listening to this call, the ballot is coming out on the 10th, probably the first thing on the 10th. Be sure and look for it in your email, and be sure to vote. All right? Thank you, Janine.
Thanks, Vince.
And oh, my Lord, that was Manhattan Skyline from